On March 16, 2000, two sheriff's deputies were shot in Atlanta. Jameel Al-Amin, a Muslim leader and former Black Power activist, was convicted. But the evidence was shaky, and the whole truth didn't come out during the trial. My name is Mosi Secret, and when I started investigating this case in my hometown, I uncovered a dark truth about America. From Tenderfoot TV, Campside Media, and iHeart Podcasts, Radical is available now. Listen to the new podcast, Radical, for free on the iHeart Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tiffany Haddish is winning so big right now. She's got three movies coming out this fall. In September, Night School with Kevin Hart. In October, The Oath, a political comedy. In November, Tyler Perry's next one, Nobody's Fool. And next year, she's already got The Lego Movie 2, Secret Life of Pets 2, The Kitchen with Melissa McCarthy and Elizabeth Moss. Tiffany's so hot right now, there's not enough water in LA to put out the fire. She's a Hollywood A-list. And she built all this after being homeless for years. She built all this on the strength of her comedy and the strength of her spirit. She made this happen by thinking it into existence. What do I mean? Let the last black unicorn tell you. It's Tiffany Haddish on Torre Show.
You seem like overnight, and I know you're not. I know you've been grinding for a long time.
Well, see, that was all a part of my plan and my manifestation. I wanted everyone to think, oh, that's brand new. Where'd that come from? And then, ta-da. She's been here a long time.
What was keeping you going when you were just grinding, sleeping in the car, coming up, no promise of that it was going to work out? Like, what was keeping you going?
Knowing that I am going to do it. Having the, like, I knew, it's like a little girl knows her period's going to come at some point. You don't know when it's going to come, but you know it's going to happen. Or like, I know I'm going to pay taxes one day. I don't know when I'm going to have to do my tax returns and stuff. I don't know if I'm going to have a job to do, but I know one day this is going to happen. As I just knew.
How did you know? Do you believe in yourself? You believed in the universe? Like,
I didn't know nothing about no universe. On the universe I knew about at that time was Universal Studios. When I was a kid, I just knew. You know how you just know. Like, you know you're going to have a job. You know you're going to have your own place. Like, it's just, you know. I didn't know how. I didn't know when. I didn't know, like, in what capacity. I just knew I wanted to be an entertainer, and I knew I wanted to bring joy. So, like, every job that I've ever had has been basically that. I have been that in that job. When I worked at a catering company, my job was to meal prep, where I'd be singing and dancing. Everybody that was in the kitchen prepping with me, they'd be like, "You're so silly." I was bringing joy, you know. When I worked at bar mitzvahs, that's for, you know, full-blown entertainment right there. You know, yeah. Energy produced 110%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm emceeing, I'm cracking jokes, I'm getting kids on the dance floor, getting the old man on that, killing people by accident. You know, I was winning. I was winning. Then I got my job at the airlines, and I was like, well, they're giving me a microphone. They let me make announcements, you know, and I'm doing stand-up comedy at the same time. Like, everything I've ever done has led to that. When I worked at the youth center, I taught, you know, improv classes, dance. We had I had a comedy class going. We surfed. I taught them how to crochet. You should have seen the Gangbangers crocheting. It was something else. Something else. But, like, always had some sort of, you know, artistic activity going somewhere. Good for me and good for whoever's around me.
Do you have to make yourself happy, or are you, like, naturally happy? Because so many comics are, like, depressed inside.
Oh, no, I get depressed all the time, especially, you know, certain times of the month. Yeah. But it's not, like, something like, where I feel like, oh, I want to die. When I was younger, I used to get so mad because I'd be like, I would get so frustrated because it seemed like everything bad would be happening. Yeah. And I'm like, why am I even here on this earth? Why? I'm just trying to bring joy. Why is everybody trying to fuck with me? Like, why are they trying to hurt me? You know? And I start realizing, like, it's how you treat yourself. However you treat yourself is how everybody's going to treat you. So I start treating myself a lot better, start doing things for me, telling me, like, I love and approve of you, Tiffany, you're awesome, you know, start saying stuff like that. Not to the point where it's like, everybody should be kissing my ass, but to the point where it's like, you know what, you're doing a good thing, this is great, you know. But there's still those days where you get lost in the mix and you're like, am I doing the right thing? Am I, like, you wake up just feeling like crap. And that's probably a vitamin D deficiency, really. Like, a lot of times people get depressed and it's really like you're deficient in some vitamins. It's really don't have nothing to do with what's going on in your world or your mind. It's just like your body needs something. So I learned that from YouTube.
I mean, I love talking on the show about success and how people achieve it. And it seems like those affirmations and that acceptance of yourself really helps you go to the next plane.
It really does. And also about who you associate with. Mm. Like, if you putting yourself around a bunch of people that hate on themselves, then you're going to eventually be hating on yourself and hating on others. And then you're going to be wondering why you're stagnant. Why isn't anything moving?
I mean, a lot of people would think it would be silly to look in the mirror and say, I love you and I accept you.
But you have to remind your body that you care. You know, you have a billion, kajillion different cells and organs, and they're working together to keep your soul alive.
Right.
You know, it's not just, you know, you got one heart, you got two kidneys, you got liver, you got a stomach. All these things work together. It's a full system of, you know, living things, things that are living because of your soul, and they're all working together to keep you alive. So if you shit on that all the time, you know, if you treat it like crap all the time, then and you don't never say, hey, good job. It's gonna fail on you, man. That machine, your meat suit gonna break.
So you gotta be, I mean, you have to be your own fan. You have to be your own sort of cheerleader.
Well, I guess I'm my mama. I'm my own mother. I'm my own, you know, motivator. And then anything else that comes around that's great. And then try to keep people around that are motivate themselves and are motivating to others so that we can, like, lift each other. That's what I try to do.
That's really interesting. And you, when you wrote out a list of what you wanted out of life, that helped you.
Yeah, because it reminded me to stay focused on these things. You know, see if you can accomplish it. I don't know how I was going to accomplish it. Just, I would see that list all the time. It's like, you got to do something on there. You need to put a new check on. Check it off.
I mean, I definitely feel like a lot of people get wrapped up in, like, what they have to do today. And they don't think about their long-term goals. I want to write a book. I want to do a movie, whatever. Well, if you want to do that in a year, you need to be doing this today.
Every day you got to do something towards that.
Yeah.
Towards that goal, because it takes a lot to get into that.
Yeah.
So, like, I said, oh, I want to make, you know, by the time I'm 50, I would love to be able to say I've made 80 different movies or TV shows. Well, that's what I was saying when I was 21. So, okay, what is it going to take to do that? Better go to some acting classes, probably. Meet other people that are doing that. You know, go to workshops. Surround myself with people that can link me into these things, you know.
When you're trying to give yourself that sense of self-belief, but then failure comes, because for an actress, you know, you go to 20 auditions, you don't get 19 of them.
Yeah, just like you go to a bunch of foster homes and they send you to a new one.
So how's that fail? How do you keep going when you get the failure?
I don't look at it as failure. I look at it as a stepping stone to where I'm supposed to be going. And also, I mean, I've been rejected so much in my youth that rejection as an adult is nothing, because I know I got me. And maybe that project that they said no to, I'm not supposed to be doing. I see, it's so funny, like, certain things I remember, like, I auditioned for and I really wanted, and I see it, and then I'm like, whoo, I'm glad I didn't get that job, because I wouldn't have been able to be butt naked walking around like that. That wouldn't have worked out for me.
But when you say, I got me, what does that mean?
I'm protecting me. I'm providing for me. So I'll be okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could tell me no. Like, I ask guys, I'm the worst at flirting. I get rejected all the time. I'm the worst, because I just say what I want right off the top. And the guy's like, well, are you crazy? What's wrong with you? Like, oh, you telling me no? Okay, bye. Like, I'm out.
It sounds like you're, like, kind of indestructible because you've...
Oh, no, I'm destructible. I'm a human. But it's what you eat don't make me shit. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. If you say no, okay, bye. Somebody else is going to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
because I know this is where I'm supposed to go. I'm supposed to be doing something.
But when you so you're grinding in the LA comedy scene for a long time.
Yeah, long time.
And then Carmichael show comes up, and then Girls Trip comes up, and you go to another level. Mm-hmm. What did you do to be ready for those opportunities so that you could ascend to the next level?
Well, I was constantly shooting sketches, constantly. I would go, when I worked at the youth center, I used to take all the kids, we would go to TV show tapings. So by the time I got to be on a TV show, I already knew how the whole thing operated. Oh, wow. And I would have them give us tours, get, you know, like it was kind of maybe a little selfish of me. I wanted the kids to see like their favorite show, but also I wanted to learn, I wanted to see it too, but also I wanted to learn how does it work? How do they do that? What's the process of that? So, and I made sure, you know, the kids got to experience it just like I got to experience it. Because most of them kids don't even get to go, you know, north of Wilshire.
Right.
Never even been to Hollywood. Right. So for them to get to see those type of things, if we get to go to like the Nickelodeon Awards, then I want to see if we can get backstage so we can learn how that works. So I can learn how do these award shows work. When I would say, oh, I'll try to get in some movies. Well, I started doing extra work because I want to see how does it work. Like, then the audition part. Oh, you get an acting job by doing auditions? Oh, okay. So then let me start taking classes on how to audition. Let me get an agent. Then an agent. I got an agent. And then they start sending me on auditions. Then at first I hated auditions because I'm like, well, I'm going to hear these people are judging me. Then I met some producers and start having conversations with them. And they're like, look, we want every person to walk in the room to get the job. We don't really want to be searching for days and days and weeks on end. We want to hire you. So you just come in there confident, knowing that we want to give you the job and that you're here to provide a service. Like, you're here offering a service. And we have to bet millions of dollars or thousands of dollars yep. on your service. So just show us the best you got. And I'm like, I started taking that philosophy with me in every single audition. Well, I'm going to bring the best Tiffany Haddish to this Dina character. I'm going to bring the best Tiffany Haddish to this Tanya role. Whatever role I'm playing, I'm going to bring the best Tiffany Haddish to this that applies, that could live, the Tiffany Haddish that could live in this environment.
Yeah.
You know, the Shay, Shannon, all these different roles I've played, like I try to bring the best Tiffany Haddish. So to prepare for it, I did the research, got on the ground floor, got the education. That's how I got to where I'm at.
Wow, wow, wow. So when you get onto Girls Trip,
mm-hmm.
and you're there with three established stars.
Yeah, movie stars, and, superstars.
Yeah, and you're not. And you got the talent, and you've been there for a while.
I
but
I am in South Central LA. I'm the shit. Just everybody else didn't know.
So is that the attitude? Like, what is the attitude that allows you to shine when you're standing there with three superstars who you've probably been watching for 10 years or more?
Right. When I was standing there with them, I don't know what allowed me to shine. My goal wasn't to shine. My goal was to compliment them and to bring what was necessary to the character. My goal was never to be shiny or to shine or outshine or anything. It was to be a part of this ensemble and to work with them as a team. And we did. We all worked together as a team. And they were La and Jada would always egg me on. So would Regina. We would always egg each other on and gas each other up. Like, oh yeah. Oh, you know what you should try to do this. Or say this. Or you know what? If you turn your head like that, that'll be hilarious. If you do, you know. So like, we were working together as a team, even though they all knew each other. I didn't know any of them, but I came in as a team player. Like, you know, I'm a rookie compared to you guys, but I've been doing my research. I've been watching videos. Like, I know how it works, and I know you have to be able to be a team player.
So you weren't intimidated, or were you?
I don't know. I wasn't scared. Intimidated means scared, right?
Yeah.
No, I was never scared. Scared, no. Excited, yes. And I was maybe a little concerned, like, I remember day one of rehearsals, I was like, are they going to be stuck up? Are they going to be snobs? Are they going to be? And if they are, then I know how to deal with those type of people. I just need to know what mode to be in to deal with that. And that none of them were like that. They were all yes and people. Like, yes, let's try that. Ooh, that sounds fun. Let's do that. And then you start to realize this is why they're stars. This is why they are where they are, because they're willing to be a part of a team, because it takes a team to make a great movie.
Yeah.
It's not just one person that makes a great movie.
Right.
It's a team effort.
Right. 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 You, I mean, it's tattooed or written on your bag. She ready.
Oh, she ready. Yeah, and I'm about to say, who got a tattoo?
And that's your motto. How do you get ready? What does that mean for a comedian actress?
Oh, she ready. Like, so I'm ready for whatever experiences might come about. And okay. then, you know, and in my mind, it's like always take note. And because, you know, when you're ready for something or anything, it means you care. Right?
Yeah.
You care about it. You're interested in it. So I'm ready for whatever it is that I care about or any challenges that may come along through the day. I'm ready to win. She ready for success. She ready to bring joy. She ready to be, you know, to eat. She ready to drink her water. She ready to go take a poop. Like, she ready for whatever it is that may come throughout the day. When I wake up, I'm prepared for it.
Yeah.
You know, some things I'm not so ready for. But then, you know, you realize you are ready for it.
Is part of that studying the script, preparing the lines? No, I mean, like, how do you do that stuff?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, you know, if I know I got to work tomorrow, like, I know tomorrow I got a 3 a.m. call time, and I have...
For the last OG.
For the last OG, I got 3 a.m. call time. I have 12 pages to do, and I need to be done by 12 o'clock, right? It's a lot, right? So... I know today I'm going to spend at least a total of 3 hours throughout the day reading my lines, studying my lines, taking notes, making notes, how I'm going to do this, and imagining, okay, where am I going to be placed at? What would the set look like? Where would I walk? Where would I sit? Where will I stand? Will I stand the whole time? Will I have an attitude the whole time? What's my emotion going to be? What do I think it's going to be? And then I won't marry that idea because I don't know what the director wants me to do, you know? And then when I get to set, you know, I wake up, I'll brush my teeth, I'll do my business, you know, wash my ass, everything, get ready, and stretch a little bit, warm up my instrument, get to work, and then be like, okay, what do you want me to do, boss? And let the director, you know, direct me, and once I know where I gotta go, then I already know the story, I pretty much know the lines, but I, like, lock it in, what, you know, cadence to use, how to do this, where to go, what to say. All that gets locked in, and then we shoot. And then we done. Then I get lunch.
I mean, you did 3 movies this year.
Oh, shit. Sorry, I just tried to drink the water and had the top on it. Spilled that right down the front. Yep. And I did 6 movies.
You did 6 movies this year. I mean, I wonder, do you have, like, 30 hours in your day? I mean, like, how did you have... enough time to be really ready for 6 movies?
Well, I don't know.
Plus all the other things, because the movie, you're also doing the TV show and.
Yeah. I don't know. It just happens, bro. It just happens.
You don't know how you had time to do all that stuff.
I don't know how it gets done.
Yeah.
You know, I want it to be done, so it gets done.
Do you still do affirmations?
Yeah, I still look in the mirror. I look at dead in my eyeballs. I don't look at anything else on my face, just right into the pupil of my eyes, sending a message to every cell in my body, every organ in my body. I'm proud of you. I love and approve of you. You guys are doing a great job. You know, let's get through this day. Let's win today. You look amazing. You know, you guys are splitting and growing so well. Look at you, you little atoms and neutrons. Keep it going. I'm proud of you, heart. Look at you, liver. You handled last night well. I'm sorry. I got you so drunk. The detox level is real. You're doing a great job at getting that poison out. I talk to myself every day.
Yeah.
I think it's important because nobody else is doing it for me. It's not like I got a man in bed with me that could be like, you're amazing, Tiffany. You're detoxing so good. You're winning. I don't have a man, so. And I do it myself right now. I mean, maybe I'll hire somebody to do it.
You
look here, I'll give you, you can live here rent-free. You don't have to pay for food or anything. You just affirmation me every day.
Just tell me how dope I am.
Don't try to have sex with me anymore. Just look into my eyes and tell me how wonderful I am. And clean the house. You clean.
That's the perfect
and organize, man. And you look into my eyeballs and tell me how fucking awesome I am. And how I'm doing a good job. And you're proud of me.
But I mean,
no, I don't think it won't work.
No, it's a dope idea, but it's an idea for sure. When it comes from you,
it's different. When it comes from you, yeah. because all them cells, everything lives in me, and it's and when I feel like, you know, your soul, I think soul, like you seen Get Out and how they was trying to transfer that man's soul into another body. Like I think that's in my mind, I think that's what happens. I feel like I've been on this earth a gang of times, and I can relate to a lot of people's different situations because I feel like I've been in those situations before. And maybe I'm just dreaming. Maybe I'm full on batshit crazy, but I highly doubt it. Like, I highly doubt that I'm batshit crazy. But I feel like, you know, this is a suit. This is a vessel. You know, and you have to take care of your vessel, just like your car. Got to change the oil. You know, I see guys wipe their cars down and be like, "Oh, look at you, Bessie. You're beautiful." You know, this is an inanimate object. It's not even real.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's real, but it's just a car.
Yeah.
Don't have no feelings or nothing like that. But they talk to it. I see people talking to their plants, and their plants are beautiful. I talk to my garden. My garden is popping. That food is delicious. Okay, sometimes I call my brother. My brother's taking care of my garden now. I call my brother. I said, "Go out to the garden." And then I said, "Put the phone on speaker." I'm like, "How you doing, collard greens? You good?" He'd be like, "You crazy, Tiffany." I said, "Yeah, cook them greens tomorrow. Tell me what they taste like." I'm like, "They were delicious." Exactly.
Because I talked to them.
Exactly.
Do you keep talking to yourself positively throughout the day?
Yeah, so I try to. Sometimes I talk negative to myself, and then all kind of crazy stuff happens. I'd be like, "See, that's what you get. You should be talking to yourself messed up." It's like a great experiment.
Are you able to catch yourself when you have the negative comments?
I catch it all the time. And sometimes people really piss me off, and then I'll go into like a 2-3 to 4 hour period of just negativeness.
Mm.
Yeah. And then everybody get it too. Sorry, Trey said. That's my sister. I'll be like, "Y'all just want me out right now." I'll just be in a bad mood. And then I look, vitamin D deficiency.
When I was in my 20s, I was on that, like, must think positively all the time. And if I would,
that's impossible.
If I would have a negative thought, I would pinch myself on the back of my neck, like real hard, to like motivate like positive self thoughts.
So you hurt yourself.
Yes.
So you hurt yourself twice.
More than twice.
So negative thought, hurt yourself.
Yes.
Pinch yourself, hurt yourself physically.
Yes, but you work out of.
You used to get whoopings as a kid?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's why. Me too.
Me too. But don't we all? I mean, like, all the black
so you
kids
like
get whipped.
Corporal punishment, train yourself not to do that.
Yes, but it made me more positive.
I guess so.
And the positive self-belief is so important. The positive self-talk is so important.
It's super important. It's super duper important. And I think it's something they should teach in school. I think it should be like a straight up test to teach you how to, like, because when you see these athletes and stuff and these rappers, people that's like winning in life, they're always, they say it out loud. I don't necessarily feel like it's that important to say it out loud in front of the whole wide world. It's more important for you to believe in, for you to say it to yourself, I think. I don't, like, you'll never catch me like, "I'm the greatest comedian alive." Like, no, because I think there's a bunch of other really awesome, super dope people. Like, and they say, "Oh, you're the queen of comedy." No, I'm not. I'm just enjoying myself. Like, and I'm just enjoying spreading joy. You want to get that title? That's a, you can decide. That's not the title I give myself.
Right.
My title is Tiffnicity. Tiffnicity, you don't stop, you don't quit. You are Tiffnicity. You a unicorn. You magical. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, I give myself different titles than what the world might decide. The world can just say whatever they want to say. But with the conversation I have between myself and my body, my soul, my spirit, my flesh, that's a whole nother, that's private.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of people feel like the thoughts that come into their mind, they cannot control those thoughts. So just things come in. If a negative thought comes in, like, but like you are thinking about, like, I can control the thoughts.
I can control all of this. This is the only thing I can control.
Yeah.
This is the only thing I can't control. I'm in control of my emotions. I'm in control of my feelings. And sometimes I might get so mad that, you know, I might lose a little control. But hey, that's fine. Or so horny, so whatever. So that's fine. That's what gives you a good story to tell later, right? Lose a little control. But I think that we all, when you start to think that you don't have control, well, then that's when all kind of craziness happens. And I'll have a negative thought, and I'll be like, yeah, nobody. Like, sometimes I'll be like, nobody really likes me. They all hate me. Then I have to be like, girl, please. Like, you got to counteract that with some super. And then it's about the energy, your emotions are your compass and your energy that guides, that leads you wherever. So if I give that negative thought a lot of energy, a lot of feeling, then well, then that's going to be a bad situation. So I don't give it a lot. I'll have negative thoughts, but I don't give them a lot of energy.
So you have this great internal voice that's pumping you up, but you also have, like, just talent. You are funny as hell. How does one be funny?
I guess you just be in that space. Just, I mean, I don't necessarily really try hard. I just go for it and just enjoy it. And also, like, being funny is with just lightening the mood and bringing joy to a situation, right? So that's, I always go with that intention. It's the intention that you're coming with. And even sometimes when I guess I've got it, it's been such a defense mechanism for me too, that even when I'm not trying to be funny, stuff just, it just automatically goes that way, because I've embedded it since I was a little girl. It's first, at first it was to keep from getting beat all the time. You know, if I make my mama laugh, she'll forget that she said she gonna beat me when we get to the house, you know. So if I can make her laugh 6-7 times, maybe she'll be like, well, you know what, she done made me so laugh so hard I can't even beat her. I'm going to just lock her in the room for a little while instead of beating her, you know. And you sit on this high chair and you read to me, and I can't even read, you know. Then I read all bad, and she get to laughing about that, you know. So it's like whatever I could do to defend myself. And it's like learning how to walk. It's a defense mechanism and a survival technique, I guess.
You were in comedy camp with the god Richard Pryor. What did he teach you about comedy?
Well, he taught me that it's about having fun. You know, the people aren't coming to comedy shows because they want to hear about problems, or they want to be, you know, brought down, or they want to hear about politics or get the latest news, or, you know, hear about what's going on in your, like, they could care less. They come to have fun. You could talk about anything you want. Whatever, you know, have whatever feelings you want to have, as long as it's fun. So if you're having fun, they're having fun. If you're not having fun, then they're like, what did I spend money on? So that was the main thing I took away. And I didn't really understand it at first, but as I got older, I started saying, well, I'm going to apply this logic to everything. If I can have fun in every situation, if I could find the fun in all this craziness, all the bad things that were happening, everything, if I could find the fun in it, maybe it won't hurt so bad.
Mm.
And so I started having fun with everything.
Mm.
And then it just kind of became, it's just fun.
I loved you last year for the recurring.
You don't love me this year?
No, I do. But I loved you for last year for the recurring joke with the white dress from SNL. How many times did you wear that publicly?
Now I think I've worn it 4 times. First time I wore it was the red carpet for a girls trip. Uh-huh. Then I wore it again. Was it
SNL?
On SNL? Then I wore it again at the Oscars. And then I wore it again for MTV Movie and TV Awards.
Mm-hmm.
But I wear it a lot at home too.
When you got it, was it a plan? Like, I'm going to wear it like multiple times and make a joke out of that?
No, I wasn't trying to make a joke out of it at first. It was just like, you know, I would try to wear it to other events, and then the stylist would be like, no, you can't wear that. You already wore it. And I'm like, I'm going to wear this again. Like, it would turn into a full-blown argument.
Right.
And I'm like, I'm not paying for another dress. Like, this is more than my mortgage.
Right.
My mortgage is $3,000. This dress is a 2,600 square feet house? No. It's about a half a yard in fabric, you know, a yard of fabric. And I can't believe this is how much I never fathomed, like, I never thought, it makes me want to cry just thinking about it. Sleeping in that car, you know, like, eating just one bean burrito for the whole day, hungry as fuck, to be counting pennies in my ashtray trying to figure out how I'm going to eat, to spending $4,000 on fabric, on something to cover my body. I never thought of that. That was never a part of the plan. And I felt I disrespected that homeless girl, the girl that didn't have nothing. Then I had to like really reprogram, like, no, you're not disrespecting her. If anything, you honoring her. Now, if you need to pawn this dress, you can get all the bean burritos in the world. But it hurts my heart sometimes just thinking like how much money, how expensive clothing is when I know it's somebody hungry as fuck that don't have a dollar. Are we allowed to cuss on here? I don't
care. Absolutely.
Look, I've been cussing already. So just thought about some kids. I'm like, well, what if the kids listening? But you know what? They probably cuss too. But Just think about it. Like, you know, like these shoes I got on, they costed $28. This outfit I got on, well, somebody gave it to me. It might be a $100 outfit. This might be $12. It looked like something you could get at the dollar, you know, the little $5 clothing store. So it might be $5. I don't know. Somebody sent it to me though, so I'm gonna wear it out of respect for them. But and I didn't have to pay for it, so I'm gonna wear it. But I just be thinking about, like, I don't want to waste money that could be used to edify someone else.
Yeah.
You know, that could be used to enhance somebody else's or enhance my existence. I could have a really great experience. That $4,000, I could have went on a trip to China, Thailand, and I could have went to France and Greece all on a Groupon for $4,000. And had the most wonderful experience. That dress could have been so many things, you know? Could have been a down payment on a better car, you know? It could have been like, I could have got the electrical work done in the Geo Metro that I used to sleep in and been there and start driving that bitch. It's a lot of things that I could have done with that $4,000. So this dress, I felt like, you know, I have to make my money back. I got to figure out how to get my money back on return on my investment on this dress. Because I hate that the whole stigma of like, oh, you wore it once and they took pictures, you can't wear it again. I hate that. Because I've been wearing the same clothes for years.
I mean, at the Oscars, you didn't even say anything. So it was just like your fans just had to know, like, oh, there she go again with that dress. She told us she's going to wear it again.
I didn't lie.
And like at the fashion Super
Bowl. My homegirl invited me to her wedding. She's like, do not wear the dress. I was like, damn it.
What am I going to do?
Okay, well, I'm wearing this other dress. I wore Tiffany. Don't do it. No, I'm going to wear this other dress. That's what I'm going to do. Unless you buy me a different dress, I'm wearing the other dress that I wore to the other event.
But that homeless girl, is that still close?
Yes, because it's like, it wasn't that far off.
How long ago
it was 2004.
That?
It wasn't that long ago. 2003. 1999.
What was the car?
Geo Metro, 1995, two-door hatchback. Sound just like that when you drive it to. That's where I get the sound from. What's that sound? That's going to success, bitch. That's the transmission messing up. That's the brakes.
Was it scary?
Not really. I mean, some days, yeah. I mean, when you like cold or whatever, am I going to freeze to death? But, and I want to leave the car on, but I don't got no gas money. I don't want to burn out the gas. So let me just layer up. That should be the remix to Level Up.
I mean, I'd be afraid as a woman alone in a car at night and.
No, I would stay in Beverly Hills. I'd drive to nice areas, you know, and the police. I'd develop relationships with police officers because they wake me up. Like, it's a team effort. I would literally be looking at my little visor. You know how you let the visor down? I'd look in there and be like, girl, this is temporary, but it's comfortable. You comfortable? Like, I would tell myself
so
all this stuff. Like,
you were this is temporary. You were doing the affirmations at that time.
Yeah, it's temporary. And I feel like every time it happened, like, it was God teaching me a lesson, like, because I was very prideful, you know, and I never wanted to ask for help. And I should have just asked for help. I never wanted to ask for help. I was the kind of person that, like, if you see me struggling and you want to help me, offer it.
Like, right.
If you don't want to offer it, then forget you. Maybe I don't need it. Like, but then I realized, you know, that last time being homeless, that was got to, like, don't ever be afraid to ask for help. Closed mouth, don't get fed. So now I ask for all kind of things. If I need it, I ask for it.
Well, I've definitely found that I have to be telling other people what I want in order to get it. People who might be able to help you, people who are just listening. But if you're not telling the universe, I want this, I want this, I want this, then you're never going
to
get it.
You'll never get nothing. You'll get to live in a Geo Metro. That's what you get.
But Kevin Hart helped you a lot.
Yeah, Kevin Hart helped a lot. It's a lot of comics. A lot of people helped a lot. That's one that was, like, to me, really major. Like, because I didn't ask for no money. I didn't ask for anything. I just told him my situation. And he's like, he gave me the advice. He gave me some money to get a roof over my head. And from that point on, I was like, oh, maybe I don't have to like physically say, will you help me with this? Maybe I just need to say what the issue is, you know, what my situation is. Or, do you know how to do this? How would you handle this, you know, or that? Like, and then people will help because they care or just because.
Sometimes you need stories that reflect the community, the culture, the world that you love. You can get some of that on NPR's new collection, Black Stories, Black Truths, where you'll hear stories of joy, resilience, empowerment, and how to create world-shifting things out of struggle. Every episode is an account of what it means to be Black today, told from a unique Black perspective and diving into the things that we care about and the stories we want to hear that center Black perspectives. In NPR's Black Stories, Black Truths, you find a collection of some of NPR's best podcast episodes that celebrate the Black experience. Turn on NPR and listen to Black Stories, Black Truths, because Black stories make up what it means to be in America, and stories should never be told without us. Listen to Black Stories, Black Truths from NPR, wherever you get your podcasts. Back in 2018, Trump's Border Patrol separated thousands of refugee kids from their parents, deported the parents back to their home countries, while keeping the kids in the United States, separating and destroying hundreds of families. It was heartbreaking. And years later, hundreds of families still have not been reunified. I recently learned about an organization that's trying to make a difference. It's El Atrolado, and it works to reunify families, providing holistic legal and humanitarian support to refugees, deportees, and other migrants in America and Tijuana through a multidisciplinary, client-centered, harm reduction-based practice. They've reunified over 100 refugee families ripped apart by Trump's zero-tolerance policy. Once they're reunited, they help each family find legal representation, housing, counseling, whatever they need to get on their feet. Imagine having your child ripped from your arms just because you went to another country seeking a better life, and you never know when or if you'll ever see them again, and not ever seeing them again. We can't let family separations go on. It's inhumane. And if you're like me, and you believe that families belong together and immigration should not separate them, then join me in supporting El Atrolado and donate today. You can find the link to donate to El Atrolado in the description of this episode, or go to gun.fm/charity and donate today. You can also consider volunteering with the organization, which offers opportunities both in person and virtual. The best way to get involved: fill out an application at their website, elatrolado.org, volunteer. El Atrolado, ELOTROLADO.org/volunteer.
Influencer. It's a word that gets tossed around a lot these days. There is a woman who went the distance, who broke ground as the first true influencer by living a remarkable life. Her name, Elizabeth Taylor. I'm Katy Perry. This is the story of the original influencer. This is Elizabeth the First.
Elizabeth the First, the podcast, wherever you listen.
There's a lot of really talented Black female comedians out there now and in the past, but you have broken through higher and harder than a lot of sisters have been able to. Why have you been able to get there when a lot of people haven't been able to?
Maybe because I don't care about barriers too much, or hurdles, like blocks, roadblocks. I don't let that affect me too much. I used to run hurdles in high school. I figure you jump over those or go around them. I don't stand there and be like, now why is this right here? Like, why are you trying to stop me? No, I'll go around you or go over you.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, I think because I don't let what people say affect me that much. I noticed that a lot of female comics would be like, oh, he said I was whack, or he said my comedy's on a third grade level. I'm like, well, great. That's a whole community of people. Third graders, there's a lot of those. Like, thank you. Like, dudes used to be like, oh, you ghetto. All you got is dick jokes. Great. You know what? It's a lot of dicks out here. I'll be able to communicate with all those dicks. They gonna get it. Okay. Anybody who's ever seen one, they'll get it. Like, so anything somebody would say negative to me, I'll figure out how to flip it into a positive, figure out how to use that for my advantage. Like, how can I take with it? Because that's an observation they made about me. That's an assumption, or they've been watching me. And first off, and two, and I always say thank you to them. Like, haters, people that be rude and ass, like, I would never put you on my show. Thank you.
Why?
Thank you for not never putting me on your show, because I'm going to end up on a better show. Like, it don't matter. Like, thank you for not, like, I don't like you at all. Really? That means you had to think about liking me, or you did like me, or you watched me. You invested your existence into deciding how you feel about me. Like, if someone's indifferent, feel nothing about me, then I'm like, well, that hurts a little bit. It ain't take no time to write nothing negative or positive. Like, that kind of hurt a little bit.
I mean, I know if I'm giving a talk and there's one person who's not laughing or clapping or smiling, and I'm like, and I'm zoning in on that person. That doesn't bother you? Like, the people who you're not connecting with?
No, because maybe I'm connected with that. Like, okay, like, I did a stadium before, and there was, like, what, 4,000 or 5,000 or 6,000 people there. It might have been 17,000, but I could see 4,000 or 5,000. And I could hear a lot of laughs. There was two older people sitting right there in the front. They was not laughing at all. They was just looking. And for like a second, I was like, I want them left. Then I was like, fuck them. Look at all these other people. Like, I'm winning. And who knows? They might be deaf. So I just started getting more physical, and their eyes start dancing more, lit up more. But maybe they don't even speak English. Maybe I talk too fast. They got to comprehend what I'm saying. You know, it doesn't, like, to me, it's not me. It's you.
Right.
Wow. Because I'm in, I'm out. I'm getting my check. Like,
so how do you destroy the stage? Because you're really good getting up there by yourself and rocking the stage, and that's different than being on a set. How do you, what are the keys to doing that?
Well, you come in. Well, I just have fun, man. I just have fun. I like to read the room. Like, I come and feel the energy in the room, and like, okay, if it's like lately, shows have been like very like. Like, you can feel like bubbly, like people are bouncing, like they like, yeah, yeah, like they want to. So what you gonna say? What you gonna do? So then that's like super fun. And I just go, and I write jokes. I like get in my voice memo and say like, okay, this will be funny. This might be funny. This might not be funny. Who knows? We'll see. You know, try it out. And I always just come with the intention of never that. Like, I say it a lot. Like, especially if I'm doing new material, I'm like, look. Some of these things I'm going to say tonight might not be funny at all. This might all suck. But I had the courage to come up here and do it. At least I ain't ugly. Like, hey, I'm here to entertain. I'm just here to have fun. You know, and I just come to have fun. I think that's how, I don't think I destroy stages. I think I have joy on stages. Like, I just have a good time.
Yeah.
Like, I come to have a good time.
How do you write a joke?
On paper?
Yeah.
Okay, so you think of the punchline usually. Like, you
start with the punchline?
I usually start with the punchline, like something that's funny to me, and then I build around that. And maybe I end up with a whole new punchline, a whole new premise, whole new whatever. But when I do it on paper, I write down what it is that I think is funny, and then, like, you know, like a brainstorm. Remember those brainstorm things you used to do in school?
Yeah.
Like, you put the main words in the middle, and then you do the bubbles, and then all the little stuff around it, all the thoughts.
But it's dope that you start at the end and then build up to that.
Because usually it's something hilarious you think about. Yeah. Like, I'm writing a joke right now about my white life ain't that great. Like, what kind of reality show would that be?
What'd you say? My white life?
My white life ain't that great. Like, I think that would be a dope reality show.
Right.
Like, my white life ain't that great.
Right? What would happen on this show?
It's a lot of things that would happen on this show. Like, maybe it's just really bad stuff. It's not funny yet. But, like, maybe they find out they got diabetes. They find out they got warrants for their arrest or some parking tickets they didn't even know they had because their cousin took their car and got parking tickets and didn't tell them.
Oh, my God.
You know. My white life ain't that great. They think they going to have an inheritance. Their parents died. No inheritance. Yeah. All you get is this old-ass house that you, that's back pay. You got back pay on taxes that you ain't got the money for it.
You remind me of the Danny Glover speech in Sorry to Bother You when he's like, you have to speak like you're entitled, but this is not how they actually are. It's how they think they are.
Right.
And you're like digging into like how they really are.
Right. How they really, really are. Like, usually they go to the grocery store, you think they're pulling out a credit card. It's an EBT card. My white life ain't that great.
That could work on MTV. Mm-hmm. I could see that.
I mean, I guess it might already be a show. Like 16 and Pregnant. You know what I'm saying? Ain't got no black kids on there. No Spanish people either.
So when you come back to do Night School after growing up in comedy with Kevin, and now you're both at this elite level, like, what is that like?
Here go the thing. I don't feel like I'm on an elite level. People keep saying that. I don't feel that way.
I don't
see it that way. I see I'm just doing my job. Like, I hate when people say that, because it's like, where's my level up card? Where's my elite level card? Because I still got the same SAG after card that everybody
But there's
gets.
Two names above the title, and one of them is yours.
And so that makes it an elite level? What if that's just how they did the poster? Like, what if I'm only in the movie for actually like 10 minutes?
I mean, are you not getting to look at scripts before most of the other actresses around? Like, are you not like getting like the first look at different scripts that are good?
Maybe. I feel like I get to look at a lot of scripts that are bad.
But most scripts are bad. But I mean, I feel like one of the things that helps the people who reach the top is they get first crack at the good scripts. And you're going to get a lot of, most scripts are bad, but if you get to look at the good scripts first, then you have a better chance of getting into good movies because you're starting from quality.
You know when I feel like I'm elite, like I got it popping like that, is when we make my ideas movies. Mm. When I'm doing my dreams, the things I dream about, like the things I want to see. When I'm making those.
Like what?
That's none of your business. You know, I'm not going to give up my.
Give me a little bit.
My creative content.
Give me a little bit.
Are you going to finance this?
I might. If it's dope enough, I'll reach under the couch. Find the money. Give me an elevator pitch for what you really, really want to do.
I ain't doing that, bro. I don't know you like that.
I'm not mad at you. I understand.
People be sitting next thing you know. I go to the movie theaters and bam, I see a trailer for that shit. That was me.
But they can't do it without you.
I want to do a reverse Coming to America.
Where you going to Africa?
Yeah. I basically want to do what I did. I want to make a movie about what I did in January. I went to Africa to bury my father. I want to make a movie about that. Mm. And how he used to, for years he would tell me that I'm a princess, that, you know, you're a royalty. We rich over in my country, you rich. And I get there and there's all these people greet me off the airplane and they like so excited to see me and they taking me and I got to meet the president of the country and everything. And I get to see my homes and stuff that I've inherited that they're supposed to make me rich. And then, I mean, you know, what's rich there is not rich here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I got goats. Lots of goats. Popping. I am a princess.
But that was powerful. Going back and
just getting to see like all the people that my dad told me about and then like having that experience like getting in the Red Sea and like just hearing my father's voice, like, when you get to the Red Sea, it's going to heal you, your whole body, you'll be healed. And I'm like, well, I wasn't sick to begin with, but boy, did I feel like 1,000 times better. I'm like, I need to take Red Sea salt baths all the time. Like, something about it, I don't know. Maybe that's where we originally come from. Maybe all, I don't know, I think all black people should take Red Sea salt baths.
Yeah.
It felt good. And then meeting the president of the country and how, like, you know, he's like a real life George Washington.
Okay.
You know, he fought in the war, you know, became the president and like trying to lead the country into, you know, prosperity and take care of the people. And then the food there, oh my gosh, no GMOs. No GMOs, like real tomatoes. Like, oh my, these are delicious. And okra, like, I like fried okra. I'm not a fan of raw okra, but I had a piece of raw okra. I was like, I should be eating okra like this all the time. And I come home and eat some okra. It ain't the same. It ain't, they look the same, but it's not. They dialing in different vitamins and nutrients. It ain't the same. Avocados taste different there. Like, oh my goodness. Like just real vegetables, man. Greens are amazing. I stole some onions and some garlics. And I brought them back and I put them in my garden. They so good. Oh, I hope the government don't come through my house and try to steal them. Too late. I got seeds already. And I hid the seeds. It's so good. It's so good. But like, I don't know. But so I would like to do a movie about that, about a girl finding out that she's a princess and going back to Africa, going to claim her throne and figuring out that, you know, it ain't what you thought it was, because a princess thing is way different than what, you know, America's idea of what a princess is.
Right. So it's sort of
a reverse coming to America.
Or reverse Black Panther, kind of.
Well, you know what? Eritrea, where my father is from, is the real Wakanda. It is the real Wakanda, I think. Mm. You know, they got that potash over there. Do you know what potash is?
No.
Yeah, that's what make your phone work. It's precious, precious metal.
Oh, really?
Do your research.
Do you want to make a movie about your childhood?
Nah. No? I mean, I will, man. It can't be about me. Like, they could do that when I die. I don't want to see that. I don't want to relive that. Like, that's the part that's, like, super hard. Because I wrote the book, you know, so that I could be done with it. Like, if you got questions about it, you can read the book. And if it don't answer the questions, then okay, ask me. But they want me to make that a movie. And I didn't write a whole lot about my child. There's more to it than that. That's something I have to have a conversation with my soul about that.
We live in a world where you can get anything you need delivered to your door thanks to DoorDash. If you don't want to do the dishes or you feel a little sick, let DoorDash bring dinner tonight. My family uses DoorDash all the time because it connects us to our favorite restaurants without us having to drive. Last night, we got some Indian food for my wife, some gumbo for me, and sushi for the kids. And everyone was happy, and we didn't have to do the dishes. The process of ordering was quick and easy, and I love DoorDash for real. So I was so happy to do this for them because I'm a customer, because I know DoorDash is your door to more. Must be over 21 to order alcohol. Alcohol available only in select markets. DoorDash, your door to more. Download the DoorDash app now to get almost anything delivered. In my mind, the greatest author of the 20th century is Toni Morrison. And her greatest novel is Song of Solomon. A mesmerizing coming-of-age masterpiece that is gorgeously written and has captivated readers around the world. The protagonist, Milkman Dead, was born shortly after a neighborhood eccentric hurled himself off a roof in a vain attempt to fly. For the rest of his life, Milkman is trying to fly. As Morrison follows Milkman on a quest to uncover his roots and find the place of his family's origin, she introduces an entire cast of strivers and liars and assassins and the inhabitants of an amazing, beautiful, fully realized black world. The New Yorker said Morrison moves easily in and out of the lives and thoughts of her characters, luxuriating in the diversity of circumstances and personalities. Toni Morrison is a genius. She's one of the greatest writers of her time, of the century. And Song of Solomon is her greatest book, in my opinion. It's a must read that will ignite your imagination and show you what the best possible fiction writing is like. And it's a timeless tale that will stay with you after you've turned its final page. When you get to the climax, you will feel it in your heart. Available now at tonimorrison.com or wherever books are sold.
My spirit and my soul got us, you know. That was not easy.
Yeah.
That was the hard. That's, you know, that's before I knew how to love myself and all that. You know, that was hard. I don't know if I want to relive that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I'll make it, maybe just aspects of it. Maybe I'll make it a white girl's life. When I'm being racist, I whisper.
Do you see yourself doing like the serious movie?
Yeah, I just did one. I did one with Melissa McCarthy.
What was it?
It's called The Kitchen. It'll be coming out next year.
And you're serious in it?
I'm serious as hell in it.
Did you like that?
Yeah, it was fun.
I mean, it's dope when the comic gets serious and like does like the depressing movie and like, wow.
I don't know about it. It wasn't depressing. It was gangster.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and there's some more things that'll be coming that'll be, you know, more drama. But I think in every good drama, there's a little bit of comedy. You have to have those moments where you can laugh just a little bit.
Yeah.
And there's definitely those moments in this movie, in The Kitchen, but it's a drama.
Well, what do you want out of the next 5 years? What are some of your goals and dreams?
Well, my goal is to build my production company, to create content that inspires people, that to enjoy themselves and to have fun and to laugh and also to think. And then, you know, by the five-year mark, see, I'll be like 44. And by then, I want to be able to, by the two streets that intersect, I want to open up a youth center. And I want to open up a job training placement center and a mental health center.
A lot of Black people don't even think about mental health.
But your mental health is everything. It's everything.
I mean, we're supposed
to just,
like, you know, tough it out, like, you know, stiff upper lip. Like, we don't want to hear about depression and all this. We, like, keep going. And you're thinking about that.
Well, yeah, because I've been around it. I grew up in the Black community and you're like surrounded by it. So it's like super in your mind. I mean, is your magic wand. That's why we have buildings and cars and all that, because someone was nurturing their mind, using their mind. There's no other creature on this planet that can build cars or cell phones. You might could teach a monkey how to do it, but it's not going to actually be able to develop the programming for it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. We're the only ones that we have magic wands inside of these meat suits that are being protected by the meat suit. So, know how to work it, know how to use it. If I could create a place where people could come to learn how to use their mind, use their magic. Like, the Bible even says that, you know, that your thoughts are everything. Like, if you think it's already done, like, you put the feelings behind it, you already committed the adultery, you already committed the crime or whatever. So it's like, that's how powerful your mind is. So if you use it correctly, if you have a place to teach you how to use it correctly, well, we could probably end world hunger, probably end all illnesses. They might kill me for saying this. Oh, man, I got to stop.
I'm winning
right now. See how I follow that up with a positive? Said that negative. You're probably going to try to keep it. I'm winning right now. See how you do that? That's how you do it.
I'm winning right now.
And I smiled when I said it.
You did?
Like, I'm winning right now. You hear that?
Well, is there a book that you have read that helped you with this positivity, this mental positivity?
A lot of books.
What did you think of
right off the top? Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Body, Heal Your Mind, Heal Your Life, Heal Your Body. I think that's what it's called. But a bunch of Louise Hayes books. I read a bunch of Abraham Hicks, Asking It Is Given. I read that book. The Bible. I read that book a gang of times. You know, the Bible is one of the freakiest books out there. It's one of the freakiest old-time books. There's some stuff in there about grabbing balls and all that. Like, I used to just comb the Bible for nasty stuff.
There's one time,
I read it three times, just combing it for nastiness. And then you're like, yeah, this is a sexual book.
Yes.
Especially in Psalms.
Right.
You know, Signs, King David wrote Signs. He a freak. Milk, honey, breasts, all that. Mm-hmm.
What drives you? What are you trying to accomplish beyond I want to inspire others? Like, what do you want to be the number one comic? Do you want to be able to take care of your family? Do you want to?
I just want to be able, like, just on like the immediate level, just be able to eat every day and make sure anyone who's genetically related to me that I grew up around is able to eat every day too.
Your brother and sisters are still like super close to you. And
yeah, we talk. I deal with all of them except one of my brothers. He a mess though, but we still talk. He's just a mess.
Are you still taking care of everybody?
I guess so, but not really. I mean, they take care of themselves, but I mean, there is things that I provide.
Like, sure.
And my brother was saying this to me the other day. My baby brother is like, you know, you're our real mom. I mean, we got our mom, but you're our real mom. Like, you're the one who like nurtures, provides, take care of. If we have a problem, we all come to you. I was like, do y'all really come to me? Because I have to hear it through, like what they do is, they do my sister tell my other sister, and then they be like, you should tell Tiffany. No, I'm going to try to work it out. Then the other sister come tell me. Then I call that sister and be like, so what's going on with you? She be like, oh, she told you? Okay, so this is what's going on. Like, I see y'all try to like indirectly tell me. They do that. Like, that it's like a little crazy triangle.
Right.
Like, that's how they,
yeah.
They don't want to come just directly to me. They want to let everybody know their business first.
I think a lot of families have that sort of like.
Yeah, I'm like, if you just tell me, the whole family won't know your business, and then they all won't be like, oh, you ain't shit. It'll just be me saying that.
I feel like I know that.
It'll just be me saying it, and I'm not going to say it to nobody else because I wouldn't want nobody saying that about me.
Right.
You know, that's what you want them to say. Like, oh, Tiffany had to help you. Tiffany had to do that. Like, you could just tell me, then I won't say nothing to nobody.
And we'll fix it together.
And we'll fix it. And then I'll teach you so you don't have to ask me no more.
What's your superpower?
Well, I think it is bringing joy. That's what I think it is. I'm not quite sure yet. But that's, you know, that's if I could have any kind of superpower, it would be to control others' joy and happiness. Give it and take it. When you do good, I give more joy, more happiness. When you do bad, I take all your, just suck it out of you. Just take it all away from you. Like, if we could do that, that would be the best way to handle, like, criminals, I think. Like, we don't have to put them in jail. Just put them in, like, a depression camp. like, take anything that makes them happy, take it all away for, like, a year. Like, nothing makes you happy. Nothing makes you smile. Like, you're not allowed to laugh or nothing for, like, a year. And then give it back to them. When they do their time, people might kill themselves, though. Never mind. If you don't laugh or nothing, like, I might die. If I couldn't laugh for a year, I might die. Ain't that something? Yeah, I just had that thought. Yeah, we not yet. But it would be a great punishment. Boy, that would hurt.
But it'd be a great power. But you kind of have that. You do have that power. You said, if I could, but you do. I mean, you don't have the power to take away joy, but you have the power to give joy.
Yeah, I have the power to give joy to people that are willing to receive it. It has to be, like, I'm talking like the superpower would be whether they're willing to receive it or not. Bam. I give it and I take it.
Last thing, what's the difference between a good comedian and a great comedian?
I don't know. I don't know. I honestly, like, that's something I got to think. The difference between a good comedian, you know, makes a majority of the audience laugh and gets off on stage on time. A good comedian is able to make a majority of the room laugh. I guess a great comedian is able to make a majority of the room laugh, and those people come back again the next night. And the next night. When you get people to come to, like, I think you're great when they be like, I've been to 17 of your shows. Every time you perform in this one place, they're there. I think that makes you pretty great. I used to do the San Manuel Casino. I think I'm a good comedian, but I used to do the San Manuel Casino in Riverside. I had to drive an hour and a half every Wednesday, and I had the same exact people there, and then they would bring more people. And then they would bring more people, and they would bring more people. And if they couldn't make it, when they did come back, they'd be like, I'm so sorry I missed you. It wasn't a requirement nor an assignment, and this is a free show. So at first, and I did it for 3 years. In the first year, I just thought, well, you know, it's a free show. They just didn't want to get out, maybe date night, whatever. But then I started to realize by the second year, oh, no, these people really are enjoying themselves, and they really think I'm freaking awesome, because they would bring me gifts. You know, they would be like, and they were like, you should try this joke, try this. And like, always like trying to help me. And I think that's something that makes you great. When you inspire people where they feel like if they missed you, if they didn't show up, like we were having an AA meeting or something, like we're having some kind of special meeting and they didn't show up, they did some kind of wrong by you for not showing up. You did nothing wrong to me. Like, it's okay you didn't show up. I'm not hurt. They're like, well, I just wanted to let you know that I really missed you a lot. Like, why'd you miss? Like, I don't even really talk to you.
Right.
Just tell the jokes. And they're like, but you look at me in my eyes. And I'm like, I got a lazy eye. I look at everybody in the Look at everybody in here. So I think maybe that's what makes you a great comedian, when people feel like they're invested in you. Like, they connect with you so much. If they don't get to see you there, they're like, they hurt.
Yeah.
That's what I think. That probably make you great.
Word. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is amazing.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to Tiffany Haddish for a fantastic interview, and thank you for listening. This show gives you fuel to power your dreams, because you can use your dreams like a rocket ship to blast you into a life you never imagined. You can make your dreams a reality, and this show can help. I'm on Twitter @Toure and on Instagram @ToureShow. Please stop by and say hi. And if you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review. And please tell a friend who would like the show. Toure Show is written by me, Toure, and produced by Chris Colbert and the Young Turks, with help from William Jolly, Jason Wallace, Candid Nicole, and our photographer, Chuck Marcus. We'll be back next Wednesday with more knowledge from amazing folks, because the man can't shut us down.